This week on The Droids, episode 11 of Andor, the daughter of Ferrix. Chris, don't look at me twice. I might have lasers coming out of the side of me. All that and more on The Droids.
These are the droids you're looking for. You got them. These are the droids.
I'm no one.
It's always a bigger fish.
Hello there.
Rebellion's built on hope.
Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, I am Mike. Chris, back to the original two. You know, we did two episodes with all droids, and here we are again.
We got that anniversary stuff. We got the showy stuff out of the way. And now we can get back to the meat and potatoes, that is you and I. I guess I just called us meat and potatoes.
I'll take the meat in that one.
Yeah, exactly. I like potatoes a lot. That works.
You know, somebody in Andor or, you know, on Ferrix has had some meat and potatoes, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. So,
you know, we don't know what they were having on Arkina 5 in their cells. I would imagine that if they had the best table of the day, you know, with maybe some meat and potatoes, right?
You think maybe some potatoes are coming out of that tube?
Well,
some mashed potatoes?
Mashed potatoes. Yeah. And then mushed up meat. So,
oh, man, yeah. No, really, the other one was like cranberry sauce or something. A little Thanksgiving tubes. Think about that, folks. Upcoming Thanksgiving, yeah.
This is the way that if you're having a Thanksgiving where you happen to have all of your family members avoiding touching the floor, maybe playing a floor is lava situation.
Exactly, yeah. Hey, wait. Oh, wow, Mike, you just nailed it. I mean, it's very clear. I don't know if Tony Gilroy has young children, but I think he must have been sitting around over the summer and just saw, wait a second, they're pretending the floor is lava.
Now, what if... We made that a story.
Yeah, kind of thematically goes with Star Wars, too, when the floor is literally lava in Revenge of the Sith. So,
yeah, it all
on
fits.
On theme.
We're accurate, if anything, here on the Droids Pod.
Gears are churning already.
Well, before we get into talking about this episode, Daughter of Ferrix, the penultimate episode of Season 1 of Andor, and that is right, Season 1 of 2. We were even talking with the droids in the thread. There is a confirmed Season 2. They have begun production.
You worried me. Oh, they didn't shoot it yet.
No, they have started production on Season 2 this week. I believe this Monday, our good buddy Tony Gilroy was off in London as they were beginning their production. You know, I'm glad and hoping that they've locked in their production budget well before the economic downturn so they can spend another $200 million on this season. I don't know if they spent $200 million on Season 1. They might have had $200 million set aside for both seasons.
That's pretty good for a TV show. I guess it's 12 episodes, though, but that's pretty good, right? Or Game of Thrones is like?
Game of Thrones is like $10 million an episode. I think the new Game of Thrones is now up to $15 million an episode.
Oh, okay. Well, it's in the ballpark then. Yeah. I mean, they're spending some bucks on this.
So, well, and it shows. Well,
this
it shows in everything
especially,
they're doing. Well, yeah, especially in the back half of the episode and what we alluded to in our little bit of a cold open here about Luthen and his ship. We'll get to all of that. But to start, reminder, leave us those reviews on Apple Podcasts and earn yourself a chance to win the R2-D2 full Lego set. This one is what? What is it? 1/6 size, Chris? I mean, it's like that Millennium Falcon that you built.
I mean, it won't fit in your basement. That's for sure. You're going to need a large backyard. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I mean, this is probably actually 1/6 scale.
1/6 scale.
How big do you think a R2 is in real life?
Well, I've seen one. At Disney World. I've been up close and personal. It is probably one of the three best photos in my life. The other two of my photos with my children when they were born.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. You don't have to order them, Mike. It's okay. No one needs to know.
Well, you know, again, we talked about them listening to this in 50 years when they have their own chance to win the R2-D2. So
that's right.
I want to be careful. I want to be careful.
Oh, yeah. Just so our listeners know, this contest goes in perpetuity. It's not... No, that's not true. When does it end, Mike?
It ends in 1 week's time. So we are recording this on November 16th when episode 11 has premiered of Andor. We will end with episode 12. So you have until Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Get in your entries by Thanksgiving. So all you have to do to enter is review us on Apple Podcasts, and then we will announce the winner here on this episode. We will announce it in our episode review. We will not announce it on the 23rd, because we want to give everybody through the 23rd.
Yeah.
So the episode that we do the following week,
there you go,
we'll will be when winner. We announce.
Well, so, it'll be a highly technical selection process, and
it has to be random, Chris.
You'll like
wanna,
it.
We don't want to have any ISB agents on.
No,
this
no, no. It is. Doing it, is a, it is a completely random. We're gonna throw it into some droids. The droids calculator. That's not us. and I can say, Mike, from my own personal experience, having built it, it is a lot of fun. You know what? Maybe I'll share my, I'll do a little selfless promotion here and share my, I think it's an Instagram story of me building. Uh-oh. Or maybe I could convert it and we could put it on the droids TikTok.
Yeah. We'll put it out there like on the droids
that.
TikTok.
Yeah, we'll get it out there. But you can watch one of the droids themselves build it for some motivation, inspiration. There you go.
Yeah. Well, and here it is. We have also earned another review, and we want to give our thanks to Mad Max Ziggy, who just reviewed us earlier this week, and you've got your chance at the R2-D2, giving us some nice props and a little 5-star review, but also saying we're making their day as they're in the hospital right now because they got hit by a car on their bike. We are so sorry to hear that. The fact that you're listening to us every night while you're in the hospital, we're hoping that we can have some fun and bring you some joy while you're there and get better soon.
We wish you a speedy recovery.
That's a scary time. I mean, the number of times that there have been cars with no regard for bikers.
Yeah.
So that's a unfortunate for you. And we obviously are thinking about you and hoping for fast recovery.
The force is with you.
Chris, how do we not give it to Mad Max Ziggy? Good thing it's random. Like if it was our opinion in here, it'd probably be going to Mad Max Ziggy.
It's random. I mean, no, you're right. Absolutely. You're right, Matt.
Well, if we had a choice here, but let's get into the episode, Daughter of Ferrix. It's tough to follow up what we had in the previous episode of One Way Out. And I think to no surprise, they gave us a lot in this episode that in a lot of ways was just as gratifying as episode 10, but just did it in a very different emotional way. And that's part of what happens when you have the follow-up to all of the action and all of the emotion that was brought in the last episode. You kind of have the next logical steps, and they didn't back off. They didn't take these things to get us to, all right, they need to set all the pieces in place. I don't think I'd just call this a setup episode. They did so much more than that.
Yeah.
And they could have very easily done that. They could have just been like, well, we got to fill out our episode run, get everybody in the places they need to be, and then we'll pay it all off in the final episode. My best example of this, Chris, and I think that this is something that we see all too often in big budget IP storytelling, is there's something like the prison break that happens. You have the escape from Narkeena 5, and then they happen to be back at the planet where they need to be to do whatever they need to do next. Rather than exploring what is the rich territory of what they do to actually get off of the planet that they're now on. And I say that as, like, it's not an extensive part of the episode. You only get, you only get within this maybe, 5-minute scene where it's Melshi and Cassian, and they're hanging onto the side of the rock. They then make their way down to find a ship, a little scud jumper that they want to steal, but then they're entrapped by the local creatures, local alien species on that planet.
They remind me of Unkar Plot.
Yeah, a little
it's
bit
mine.
Of
mine,
especially with the quad runner there.
Yeah, a little bit of a bunker plot on that.
Yeah,
but
nod.
I think I don't know, Chris, if this is making any sense, but I feel like so many other shows, you would get to that cathartic moment that they escape, and then the next scene or the next episode would be him back on Ferrix, trying to get close to see Marvel.
Oh
again.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of one of the a lot of shows would do that, and that's also like one of the advantages of television, but. I mean, the show's doing the work. It's gonna show us these details. Again, this show has been nothing but breaking new Star Wars story and breaking new Star Wars characters and visuals. Like, it is continuing with that momentum, and it really does not disappoint when it comes to this kind of detail. Like, even that sticky net, like that.
Yeah,
that was sweet.
Great.
It was. They couldn't just use a net. No, because that's not what these. Two fine folks do.
Yeah.
Well, they're very like much their own characters. They're very unique. They're very bizarre.
And we have to go back and like look at the species. And I believe that they are a subtle reference to a species that has been in Star Wars prior. And there's been a lot of talk about Andor not having a lot of creatures, not having a lot of aliens. And
well,
so this
they
is
got
kind of
two great ones
moment.
There, yeah.
I like they did it very well. But once again, I don't know what they're doing differently. But the way that they shot this, it doesn't, I'm not looking at it like, oh, there's the clear volume or the background. Like when they're hanging on the cliff, I'm like, did they find a cliff for them to hang on and go put them on the cliff to shoot this? Like it just looks great.
I mean, it looked real to me. It looked like they were actually on a cliff. That moment was interesting because they really do kind of start out at the gate. It is a little fantastical there where he's like holding on. He's just like, I can't hold on any longer.
Yeah.
And it's a good metaphor, but I feel like I was already tired from them. Just it was like one more leap for me of exhaustion of them having to go like one more height. Because it's like, they already went down, they already swam for miles, and now they have to climb this thing. So I'm glad we didn't linger on it too long.
Yep. Yeah, I and they also liked that they were really tight on the fingers and on the toes, and clearly like the pain that they've already been in, because, you know, obviously they couldn't easily just find shoes and take them with them. And they're on the run, back being fugitives, and none of this is going to be easy. And I've really enjoyed the bonding of Melshi and Cassian throughout the prison and then throughout this episode. Chris, I am a person who does not like watching captions on anything. I want to enjoy the visuals. I don't want captions over what I watch. And I know that's very much the opposite of like a younger generation, because for those who've been living on the internet for so long, they just know captions. The captions are just part of their experience. And now captions are becoming a bigger part of watching shows and movies. A lot of people prefer captions. I do not, except for when these two creatures were talking to Cassian and Melshi, because I had no idea at all what they were saying.
I mean, yes, they had a very specific dialect. It was kind of funny what they were going for. They almost like spoke like Yoda to a certain degree.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it was like, hold on one second. There's a very loud sound coming out of my part. I don't know if you can pick that was being picked up. It was almost like they were speaking like Yoda or something, and it was kind of like, it was very funny. I had a hard time discerning if they were like bad or good, and they were kind of speaking in these riddles. But I agree, Mike. I think a little captions would probably help that out.
I actually went back and I turned them back on so that I could listen to it. They were really just talking about the Empire and how they had ruined their fishing and spoiled their waters.
Right.
And then it appeared that the one thing I didn't quite understand was why they gave the quad jumper up. It just seemed like maybe they understood the plight of Melshi and Cassian.
Right.
And they were like, all right, we're going to give it to you.
I felt kind of like they were also like both sides in it a little bit. They were like, all right, well, the Empire's going to destroy our water, or someone else is going to come and destroy our water. Like they were kind of like, you people that keep like jumping in into our lives are the problem. And like, we just want to do whatever weird fishing thing they wanted to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like they were kind of like almost agnostic of the Empire or the Rebellion. They were both like, well, this, our problems are our problems. And you folks keep coming into it.
I just read it differently. I read it as that they hated the Empire. They were like, the Empire's ruined everything for us.
Sure.
And these guys were like, oh, if they've ruined your lives too, then we're going to work with you.
I could see that too, where it's like almost like whatever kind of species those aliens are, they're like, their gears turn a little bit different. So it's hard to gauge if they're like good or bad, but then it turns out they did agree. That's a fine read.
Well, and I think we don't see it. We never see them get to Neimos and get back to the planet. So my thought is maybe they gave them a ride instead of just Cassian and stealing the ship. So maybe there was that. But
unless they were fans of Neimos, the vacation planet.
You're right. They needed their own vacation.
They want a little break.
But I really do. This is one of those classic tip of the loaf cat from the droids to Gilroy, the production crew, everybody made this. Because I've so fascinated so many times where you're just like, oh, wonder how they got back to this planet. You know, like, how did they escape and how did they get there? They're like, no, we're going to show you exactly what they did.
I mean, going back to what you're saying, how they would skip that scene. I think if you're going to write yourself into a corner like they did on that prison system, like you gotta show it. You have to show, like, you can't just take for granted. You can't, no half measures there, Mike. That's to borrow. I keep comparing the show to Breaking Bad, but I mean, that's a show that's done a similar thing. It's like they show you the math, and I think that's what makes it so much more engaging.
You're right, and this show has absolutely no half measures in anything that it does. Chris, I jumped us right into reviewing some of the episode, but I want to make sure I get your thoughts just off the top on, like, your overall takeaway from this episode.
I mean, we were talking very briefly before we started recording, and, like, I dare I say, like, this episode, the pattern here is, like, each episode I feel is better than the previous. I mean,
yeah,
I think that this episode, well, the other one kind of raised the actual, like, physical stakes. I think this episode raised the emotional stakes in a way that I was truly not expecting, just from the get-go. Yeah.
Well, and that leads me right into something that I've been thinking about, the emotions within this, Chris, is the emotions of droids. How far have we come?
I was just feeling it. I mean, I felt so sad for that poor droid.
Well, and they lingered in it. They gave it the time. They treated B as a character, and this is not a droid. This is not an it. They treated it as a character, and this is the first time a droid has been treated as a character that is not in any way a comical character. Right. It might be cute. I think there's some cuteness to B, and we feel for B, but like some of the tight close-up of B's eye, some of the perspective that we get from B within this.
Well, it's even that opening shot where you kind of see, like, the water is like, is crying?
Yeah. you're right. Yeah.
Like, what is happening there? And then it kind of expands further, and then you kind of start seeing this almost like puppy dog logic of, like, well, I don't want to leave. What if she comes back? And then you start to see you just start to feel those little, like, tugs at your heartstring there, because it's like, it is very emotional. And I mean, to have that character be almost the kind of the lens at which we see her passing, I think is a really interesting way to play that scene, especially in Cassian's absence.
Without a doubt. And I liked everything about what we got in this episode of Marva's passing, meaning, like, the way that the community reacted to her. Obviously, when Diego Luna and Cassian found out, and what it meant for the efforts of both Cinta and the Empire, what they were trying to do, because now this is going to set us up for the service that happens in the final episode that's probably going to bring a lot of our characters together. But I think the only thing that I had a little bit of a gripe about was I wanted one more scene of Fiona Shaw. I just wanted more Fiona Shaw.
Yeah.
But I was always going to say that. Like, there was never going to be a point that I didn't want to see more Fiona Shaw.
Yes. And I mean, I feel like it was also, like, it felt a little abrupt. Like, I do agree. I wish we had one more lead into that, but I do understand the way to do it. And there's only so much you can put in an episode. So it's probably hard to drive that focus when so much else is going on. But yeah, I agree. Maybe we'll get some flashbacks.
Yep. Yeah, that could be. I would hope so, but, you know, we get a little bit more of B wanting to hang around, and we're going to jump around. There's just barely another scene, and I'm forgetting what the character's name is, who's Cassian's friend in this episode. But he ends up trying to say that B needs to come along, he needs to leave his home, and then he will stay one night with him in his home with Marva. It's just nice.
There's always been this kind of underlying story with droids in Star Wars where some people trust them, some people don't. They don't serve their kind. Like, I think it's like a very nice, again, learning new things in the Star Wars universe. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, some people have different affection for droids, and some droids show their, like, different affection for their like the humans around them. And it's I was not expecting it. Like, I thought that droid was, like, great. I didn't really think we'd revisit. I wonder. I mean, I feel like you can't attach that much emotion. Like, I feel so empathetic for it that, like, does it become K2SO? Like, does it like, in my mind, after they did that with in Solo, who's the droid?
With L3?
Yeah, with L3. I'm just like, oh, you could just, like, just download them into something else so they can be along for the journey the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think that they're going to do that. I think, like, obviously...
Yeah.
Because it's also, it's a very different
yes.
experience for who K2 becomes, obviously. Yeah,
absolutely.
But I get what you're saying. It's interesting to think. I'd love to think about, look, we got L3, and L3 was... I enjoyed L3 as a character. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is great. I really wanted to see more of that. But what if we, you know, you had... multi-film, like if it was C-3PO and, you know, C-3PO wasn't just comic relief, C-3PO was a character that you empathized with, right. and you cared about, and you went 9 movies in, and just when you thought that character was gone and going to be lost,
yeah.
they transferred into another droid, it could be a really, you know, emotional moment.
Yeah, but they just, Babu Frick just rewired him instead.
Well, and that's the thing, like, I didn't feel that in Rise of Skywalker, because
right.
it was, you know, I guess that's what they were going for, so
yeah,
I can
they're
give
trying
the,
yeah
they credit on that, but
yeah,
but yeah, there's just a lot of sadness, there's a lot of the grief of a droid. I just never really expected that we'd be exploring that
again. It's another angle I just did not expect, and then just kind of this puppy dog loyalty, it really hit hard.
Yeah, and it's you know, I'm sitting and rethinking about it, and like
yeah.
even trying to watch the scene again, there's a way that they shot it too, where there's a loneliness in all of what they mm-hmm. shot, despite him being there with
yeah.
Brassos, I think is the name of the character.
Yes.
Brazo.
Oh, is it like Only Murders?
Brazos. It's yeah. Brazos. You know, Steve Martin would fit in the Star Wars universe. I
think it'll happen.
Eventually.
Yeah.
But I just felt lonely within those scenes, the darkened apartment, and there he is not wanting to leave. And thank you, Brazos, for being a very nice character to stay with him for another night and
yeah.
treating him, again, like a being rather than just an it. It's,
right, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I think they also did something that Star Wars will kind of show grief and move on very fast.
Yeah.
Just as a like classic yep. example, Obi-Wan Kenobi. There's like one scene, one yeah. scene of him sitting sad on a bench, and then that's kind of. I mean, I think
you're right. You had to get to work. They were trying
yeah,
to escape.
There was
more time.
Exactly. So I think it was good to kind of have this, and it also helped. I think be a good motivation for the Empire then to kind of see where their plot is. It actually made their thing seem a little more like plausible to like
yeah.
let's give them the funeral, let them make the bricks
yeah.
and I again another cool world building detail where it's like oh,
I know.
Yeah
I know
they become part of the world that they're in, they become a brick that's made because that's their like town's trade, so their elders are and people are all over the galaxy in brick form. It's like it's super cool.
Chris,
that has to be from some kind of lore or something, because that's just like such a cool detail.
Yeah, you think it might already exist in some culture that is.
That's
in,
what. Yeah,
in the real world.
I don't
yeah.
know. I'd be interested yeah. to know if any of our listeners know.
Yeah, I mean, I could very easily see it being that or a modification of something.
Yeah,
that was
exactly.
Real life.
I just thought it was such a cool detail.
Chris, you've given me an update to my will. When I go, you're
you
going
wanna,
to make
okay.
sure that I am put into a brick. In that sweet, yeah. sweet town of Batuu, where I belong.
Go. Yeah, exactly. You'll be a piece of plaster, Mike.
and be like, hey, Robert, why are you throwing up on that corner specifically of Batuu? That says it was in honor of a droid.
This tip yip tastes weird.
Well, I do want... You mentioned that scene just... I love the confidence again of Dedra. Like everybody from the ISB who's working on Ferrix are like, yeah, you know, we're not going to give him this permit. It's like, no, absolutely not. We're going to draw him out.
Yeah.
We're going to get a small little thing, and we're going to make this the easy thing for us to capture him.
Once again, it's like all of the Empire scenes are always one person saying something confidently, and then another person saying, "No, that's dumb." it's kind of. It's like it's very
dumb.
Like almost like a workplace comedy where it's just like everyone thinks they know what to do, but no one really does. And
well, that's a lot of what our world is today as well. All of the mirror that has been shown to the way we all work as well is also interesting. I want to give a call out to Clea. Because I think the scene between her and Vel, where Vel is trying to come to her with information so that she can pass on and help with whatever's going to happen with on Ferrix. I just think there's a lot of opportunity, or a lot of times where you could say they could take a step back and the writing could be a little bit less than, because they just had this incredible episode. But instead, we get this scene with Clea saying to Vel, you know, you think you're the only needy panic faces at the window? You are one of many. You know, I love that. I love that there's so much more that we don't see that Clea is dealing with.
It almost seems like she's holding her cards back. Like, she has a greater role than I think we know at this point.
Chris, are you trying to say she's Leia?
I'll spread the conspiracy. I mean, I could see it. We mentioned that last week, I think, or did we talk about it in the text chain or something? But I could, like, now that's all I can think about. And I had the theory with Rogue One that it was going to turn out that, Erso was going to be, end up being Leia. That was my side theory of Rogue One. So now I'm just looking for it. There you go. That's a hot and fresh.
we haven't had a lot of hot and fresh in a while. And
no, it's been a while.
You would have thought on our 200th episode we would have gotten a hot and fresh.
Also, it's almost like the show's so good that it doesn't require conspiracy theories. Like I'm completely satisfied with what we're seeing and what we have, and I don't need to figure out any mystery.
And also, to the point of Vel and Cinta, like, they've done a relationship so well between the two of them that it's not, you know, what was the example of, there was a recent, in Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, you know, they have a couple of, there's two women who have like a moment at the end of the movie. And it reminds me of Rise of Skywalker, where there was a representation in a moment. This is just ingrained in the storytelling. These two characters have to do what they need to do for the rebellion while giving up parts of themselves and giving up their relationship. I mean, they still have their relationship, but it's not what it can be, or not what Vel wants it to be, because they're not allowed to, because they have to do everything for the rebellion. But I think where you almost have these more like standout, almost lightning rod moments where it's very clear, that's where it draws in the naysayers and draws in the negativity and the bigots. This just being a part of the show hasn't done that. Or the bigots are tired and they've just lost too much and they're not saying anything. I don't know.
Right. Is it the execution? It's so well done that it's like,
any representation is good representation. I'm not trying, I don't want to diminish what the representation was in those other movies that I mentioned. I think this just made it, it's less digestible as a single tweet that someone can then rage against. As some of the other things.
It has layers. Quote a green philosopher, Shrek.
Not the green philosopher we know of Star Wars.
Not the green philosopher you're looking for.
Chris, we should mention, just speaking of broader visibility for the show, because, you know, mentioned that there hasn't been as much critique of the show or commentary of Andor compared to some of the others.
Who's watching it?
I think there's still a good amount of people watching it, but it's really interesting. Disney is going to be putting it on ABC, Hulu, and FX for one night on Wednesday, November 23rd. Smart. They're going to put the first two episodes, so not the finale, but the first two episodes, to offer it up. So anybody who, somehow, if you're listening to this podcast this far and you haven't watched the show, it's probably not you, but maybe tell other people. Let other people know this is their chance.
We were talking to the chat, like, this is HBO free weekend.
Yeah.
Very smart. Do it the day before Thanksgiving, because you watch two of them, and then you're going to be like, well, I'll pay the $7.99 or whatever it is to get the rest, because they'll all be out too. So I think it's a really smart move, especially if people haven't caught up yet. Like, just be like, I'm hoping that it's like a, we like it so much, we want to share it move, and not a please watch this move.
Yeah. Well, I think it's that. I think there's a lot of pride in this show, and as there should be. I think they also, and I heard this on another podcast, and I give the credit there, where this is a show that is not exactly catered to the standard Disney Plus audience. There's a lot of people who sign up for Disney Plus for the back catalog, for what they have for their kids, so they can watch all the Pixar movies and all the Disney animated movies. And then there are the Marvel diehards and the Star Wars diehards.
Yeah.
The like adult drama seeking television series watcher who isn't already a Star Wars fan probably may not have Disney Plus if they don't already have a family. And so like
part
there's
me,
opportunity out there.
Part of me also wonders like the conception of this show where it was like pre-Disney Plus, where they're almost like, this show will go on ABC. You know what I mean? Or like on Hulu. Like they almost made it with the intention of it being like an arable television show.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to watch. Will they have commercial breaks? Yeah. Will there be... I mean, there'll be special promos within this, but will there be any... you know, features or Diego Luna saying, we can't wait for you to see our favorite show here. Please enjoy these two episodes and blah, blah, blah.
I honestly, if this was like a Sunday night ABC show, it would feel so like cozy and nostalgic with commercial breaks.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like, or like whatever night Lost aired, it was like Tuesdays.
Yeah, it was Wednesday, TGI Wednesday.
Oh, there you go.
Gonna get my Lost on. Yeah. Gonna get my
drink on. If they did something like that, I mean, why not? If we're all about the nostalgia, go full bore. Just air it weekly. I don't know.
We also in this episode get Cinta and an Imperial officer both hanging out at the same coffee shop. They're just watching from the same place together as they watch Marva's apartment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I just thought that was kind of funny that the two of them are there.
Everyone walked by and just coughs, "Nark."
Well, and we get back to Bix, and Bix certainly, we've seen that she's gone through a lot in the torture that she's been in. Not only is the makeup great, but I just continue to be pretty awed by everybody's performance. But we're pretty blown away by all the British actors. We know what Diego Luna, Luthen, we're all going to bring, but Bix is not, she's not a British, you know, standard actor. She's somebody else who has really brought a lot to this show as well. And I really love her performance and all this. Yeah.
And also like props to the sound design in this scene too, where it's kind of like echoing, like her mind is just kind of bouncing back and forth. Yeah. Just that kind of psychosis. Like, I think that is a really neat detail, and they show the pattern, the cameras, like the set of six things. Mm-hmm, and like that is okay. So now we know what those are.
Well, and and I think when they shot those out in A New Hope, we knew they were cameras. I think
I think they're cameras, but aren't they like emitting the sound or like participating?
Oh no, I thought that was just her mind still being broken.
I was wondering if it was like part of that system though. Like, does the Empire just like install that as an alarm to like wig people out?
I mean, could be, but that can be read many ways. But I get what you're saying.
I just thought it was cool to see those. The last time I've ever seen a close up of those was the old Star Wars card game.
I remember. I think I had one of those as well.
Yeah.
Well, so she is presented with is Krieger, the person, the Axis, the Luthen that they're looking for. We don't see her answer. But I almost wish and hope that she's savvy enough to know, like, I don't maybe know who this person is, but if I can draw them off the trail of Luthen, that could be good.
Right.
We don't know what that next step is.
Yeah.
But it's kind of intriguing to think about the possibilities of what she can do.
There's your mystery. Yeah.
Yeah. From there, we return to Mon Mothma.
Yes.
And Mon Mothma and Vel, this is by far the most despondent that we've seen Mon Mothma in all the scenes within this. But Chris, I don't know how you felt. I loved watching two adult, you know, cousins, family members look on as they feel like their child or their relative as is being indoctrinated into the wrong thing, but they can't say anything.
It kind of is like, I feel like there's like the adage that like, if you grow up real conservative, your kid will, and you're real conservative, then your kid will be a hippie. Or if you grow up a hippie, then your kids will be real conservative. Like, I think it's like a very funny kind of timeless aspect of like,
yeah,
this kid's chosen the dark side, like on their own, and they're just like, oh. Like,
you're absolutely right, Chris. Like, and I love the slow drink that she takes as she watches. But it's interesting because it's, you know, they're seeing her take like a very different path. But it also, we have seen nothing but absolute disgust from her daughter towards Mon Mothma at all times.
And
yeah,
I think in this world that they're trying to build from this story, like, it also shows that, like, okay, well, she is the new generation and she has been getting fed the propaganda since Order 66, since her birth. So it's like, she is, oh, there's somebody like that. So she is like getting that, we're seeing how a generation that doesn't know the other side of this is being like indoctrinated and being like pushed upon these kind of old school values. And I mean, again, that's something that probably scarily reflects in the world we live in today. It's like all this old stuff is coming back to kind of haunt us. But because there's a generation that's been getting indoctrinated by it. So I think that's a fun's not the word, but an interesting detail of the Star Wars world to show, like, we never saw how the Empire took hold, and now we're starting to see, like, oh yeah, like there is a point where it starts to affect people in a way that those who know better, but those who don't, it's harder to show them the light.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't envy Mon Mothma trying to figure out a way to get her out of that, and also don't envy the situation she's in, because there really seems to be absolutely no choice for her unless.
Yeah.
Luthen or another character comes to bail her out with the credits, the 400,000. Right. Well, I actually saw a nice GoFundMe is being built for Mon Mothma out on the internet right now. 400,000 credits.
They take credits. Out. Yeah, that's good.
But I felt sadness in that because, like, there's a lot of sadness in it. But I also love the exterior shot of the start of the scene where it's the glass and it's all covered in rain. And then they cut inside to Vel and Mon Mothma sitting on the couch. I like that a lot. But her sharing everything back and forth and then just the continuing, like, slow draining of everything from her face in the emotion that she's losing because she's sharing how terrible the situation she's in is.
And also a much needed literal recap.
Oh, I was like,
thank you. They threw us a bone. I was like, I understood the gist of what was going on, but that kind of helped.
I agree. I don't mind, like, I think there was some critiques that I've heard elsewhere just about how, you know, oh, you love Mon Mothma, but does her scene and all this story make sense right now? And my whole thought is, no, it totally makes sense. I don't even need to know more about it. I just, she's in a difficult spot.
The Empire
might find her out because of this, and it could end up ruining everything that she's been building and ruin all that she sacrificed, including the relationship with her daughter. And so, what else is she going to be willing to do? I mean, I hope she's saved from this, but this show, I don't know. It seems like we're not headed towards a happy ending.
Well, once again, it shows kind of the magical realism of the universe they're creating, where it's like, you're not, I think there's a difference when you, like, over-explain details to make sense, and then when you almost, like, show and tell details that just strengthen the story. So everything, them collecting all that money, all the credits from the heist, and then it's like a lesser story would just say, like, now we have all this money. And then you're kind of like, when, like, someone know if somebody came in with a new coat or what? You know what I mean? Like, they're explaining how this kind of organization would hide the money. Like, they're explaining those details that actually make the story more believable, even though it takes place in outer space in a galaxy far, far away. Like, these are the details that you need to make it feel like there's actual stakes at play. And I think Solo did kind of a good job at that as well, like, where they would explain kind of the game and how you play it. So I more kudos to him.
Yeah. And the performances, again, Genevieve O'Reilly is just incredible. I liked the actress playing Vel, who I don't know her name off the top of my head right now, but she is actually,
it's sitting here. We need to get like a one sheet before our podcast.
You're right. It's sitting in front of me. Faye Marseille is her name. Who's also, we mentioned she's from Game of Thrones before as well.
Notoriously,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I notoriously cannot remember anything. Any detail.
When Mon Mothma says Aldani, you know, there's the look away from Vel of just like almost, I can't meet your eye right now because I know that even though Aldani was successful, it's put you in this challenge.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they also say Chandrillon in that scene. I don't know how they say it.
Chandrillon? I think we're
Chandrillon,
getting
Chandrillon, yeah. Chandrillon. Which is funny because we discussed that last week or earlier this week.
But the look of disdain, again, from her daughter as her daughter is hanging, is hugging Vel. Like, it just it drives me up the wall. It's palpable. I think a lot of people have kind of like justifiably been like, who cares? Just give her up. And then I thought anyone who's been saying that probably just like, you know, doesn't have kids, I guess.
Because you're like, go.
Maybe your kid hates you, but you're still not like, I'm just going to give them into a lifetime of pain.
That's a whole different path. Yeah, that's not, that's a different kind of person. Yes.
Chris, I want to ask, would you watch, I think I know the answer. Would you watch just a Mon Mothma series? Just like everything, every episode is about Mon Mothma.
I absolutely would, especially knowing where she goes to know how she got there. Yeah. 100%. I would love it.
Yeah.
I'm as interested in that storyline as I am interested to see how they go as Andor goes from this to Rogue One.
Yeah, and I think Andor is probably a little bit more logical to be a show because Andor can have the action within it. A Mon Mothma show would just be like, we're only in the Senate and we're only in her family dynamics. If they decided that Mon Mothma now is a blaster, I feel like I'd be like, eh, it's a stretch.
Yeah, exactly.
Has she ever had a blaster maybe within the Clone Wars? I don't know.
I don't know.
If you know, write in droidspot@gmail.com. Let us know if she's ever had a blaster before. So Cyril Karn, we get a little bit of look at this, and really it's all about getting him back into play to get him to Ferrix because he gets a message from the former sergeant. And Chris, I don't know about you, but I really thought this was maybe the moment that he was just going to murder his mom within their apartment.
Yeah, I was getting some real Bates action there. I was
right? Like, total Bates. Like, well, the whole thing is a Bates action with the two of them.
Well, it was also like he's got this new job, and you could like see in his head he's committed to like, I'm gonna go figure this Cassian thing out. I think they're gearing him up to like, he's gonna, I think he's gonna die.
You think so?
I don't know what's gonna happen to him, but like, I feel like they're making it, I honestly have no idea, but I feel like he's gonna like think he knows what he wants to get, and then maybe his mind will be changed by the time, I don't know.
Hmm.
He just keeps getting pushed aside constantly, and now he's like, this is my moment. I'm going to risk my brand new job. I'm going to steal from my mother. And I'm going to go and get Cassian, and everyone's going to love me. And I feel like he's going to do that, and no one's going to love him for it.
Well, maybe Dedra will. Maybe Dedra will. I think he's actually probably going to do something right here, and it's going to put him in a position of being a part of the Empire, and then he has his bigger fall in season two.
But who knows?
It just seems like if he just went into this and failed miserably in the final episode, it would be like, all right, well, did we really just need to see this massive failure throughout this entire show? Like, everything he's done has been a failure?
Or somehow he, I mean, well, he's chasing something that he thinks he knows what it is, but I think it would be interesting if once he finally got to that moment, he realized what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But who knows?
But I don't know. I think he's doubled down so much on justice and anger. Like, I thought that if he was going to take that route, it would have happened after episode 3.
Yes, you're right. You're right. Yeah, absolutely.
Cassian gets his credits back by heading back to Neimos and grabbing what was left in the room he was in before he was captured. Before we get Luthen paying another visit to our good buddy Saw Gerrera, my opinion has not changed very much, and I actually think that like Luthen has a line in this where he's like, just like, Saw, focus. Focus. Can you just like listen?
Yeah, I like the performance. I feel like his character, it feels more, I mean, I like him as an actor, and I do
I
like
love
the
him
character.
As an actor. I think Forrest Whitaker
like
is amazing.
It is one part of the show that almost feels like it's part of a different movie or a different series, which is fine, but it's kind of like, it's almost like a preview. And then I think they kind of hint at that too, where he's like, we'll call it war. Like, I think he belongs, that character just belongs in a different kind of story. And that's kind of, I mean, we're getting him on the outskirts. And I think that's kind of, like, I think it's great once we see him in Rogue One. Like, then it makes sense.
Yeah. I don't like any of it. Like, I think Forest Whitaker's amazing, but yeah. I don't like Saw in Rogue One at all.
Or Clone Wars?
Clone Wars seems to make a little more sense because that's before he apparently loses his mind.
Got it.
But like within all of this, he's just constant, you know, questioning of if everyone is against him, and that's all that we get. It's like the only note.
Yeah, you're
of
right.
Character.
It is a little, yeah, it's a little frustrating sometimes.
But it does. I agree with you. Like he seems like he's maybe from something else. However, Luthen, absolutely, this makes sense for his character. It makes sense for him to be presenting this whole. Here's Krieger. What's going on with Krieger? I'm giving you this option. It's still showing him trying to bring everyone together and then trying to talk people through and rationalize why he has to do the things that he has to do. Not to save himself, not to make himself feel better, but like to continue to gain trust, to continue to build the rebellion that he needs to. You know, he could probably have just avoided Saw and not said anything, but you know, there's parts of the show where you're going to bring these characters together for a reason.
Yep.
And then we get the great joke about it was two tubes. Two tubes was my inside man.
Yes, right. I like that detail. That was a very fun, subtle, just like, he's like, what? Cause I mean, also two tubes is just like, no nonsense all the time. he's such a buzzkill character where it's just like, he's one of those Star Wars, like villain-esque guys where it's just like, you like don't want to be around them and you feel uneasy when they're in a scene.
Yeah, but I can easily see, like, again, the long game here with Saw. There's more to be done between these characters. There's more for them to be together. So it makes sense to, like, continue to build the story.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean,
despite it not going anywhere with whatever they're going to do with giving up Krieger and his group.
Right, and obviously it ties right into Rogue One, so it is cool to kind of see that.
Yeah, without a doubt. And then, you know, from there, we get more of the episode where... We head into what is one of the coolest.
I mean, genuinely impressed at this space battle. Is it the first space battle in the series, right? Yeah,
the first space battle. There's been space scenes and there's been ships and
but this is the first. I mean, yeah, from a technical perspective, I would say it was just a well sequenced. Well covered, just well made, like sequence overall. Like it was awesome looking visually. It held up. It looked like a Star Wars movie. Like it was cool. We got to see a new ship with this kind of tractor beam radar. Yep. It was a surprising scene because I was like, well, Luthen, oh, he's got to be so careful. Like he's definitely not gonna like rock the boat here. And then when he was like. Prepping with his AI, like what to do. Like it reminded me a little bit of the pod race scene when he's like loading up the one engine and everything. So we know that like that's kind of a thing in Star Wars where the engines overheat and they gotta move levels to the other one and things like that. And then man, boom, the surprise, the kind of weird missile shrapnel gun thing he shot at.
I love that.
Detail of it still deteriorating while he's flying around, which I think is like that's pretty nice new idea for Star Wars. Like they usually don't have a lot of stuff, especially the older movies didn't have like a lot of stuff like floating around just due to probably the technical limitations of the time. So like that was cool. And then I mean, Mike, we know what it is. It's the ship had lightsabers.
The ship had lightsabers.
What a fantastic idea.
I think that was used in the trailer and I had forgotten about it.
I had no idea. Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't sit in my mind at all anymore.
I mean, it was phenomenal. I like audibly cheered.
I did the same, Chris. Like I honestly, fourth time during watching Andor where I have uncontrollably or involuntarily cheered.
Watching that view from the bridge, that standard Star Wars shot from the Imperial Bridge of a Star Destroyer, and just seeing those two little puffs of smoke, and then he just zips off. Like, he was like a ninja. It was like a ship ninja. Like, just like all of a sudden,
well, and
everything was done. I think it was like a 4 or 5 minute scene?
Like, yeah, somewhere around that, there. Well, because it's a lot of the buildup. It's
and
a
the
lot
actions,
of that,
the action's like 30 seconds. Like,
yeah. But that buildup is what makes the action even better, because that Imperial officer on the bridge of the Star Destroyer, first of all, what a just like excellent, excellent, dead, angry face.
Yes.
Like just
a perfect foil.
It's just so, so good. They have 100%. The great back and forth that we've seen in a lot of other Star Wars. But I think it's also like, you just don't think that he's, again, any way that he's got out of this. But we don't know about the countermeasures that he has. We don't know about the lightsabers that are coming out of the side of the ship.
Yeah.
And it all felt like, oh, well, of course, this person who has been so prepared for everything, who has a disguise, who has a different way to approach all of this stuff, would have a ship that has things that we've never seen before.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, this is why he's in charge.
Yeah. Well, and this, but this is also less about why he's in charge, but why he's still alive and why he's,
why
able
he's
to
still
be successful.
There you go. That's the right answer. This is why he's still alive. Yeah.
And I think I love the idea that like a small ship could be this big a danger to something like a Star Destroyer, or I know we're messing up the name of whatever this new ship is.
Yeah.
But that it could be that dangerous by, you know, having something cool like that, like the shrapnel. But it's one of those things where it is such a small fighter, they probably didn't have their shields up. They didn't even take the moment to get
their
shields up.
Yeah, I mean, it's the classic thing with the small ships can like hide around the shields. You know what I mean? Like they can't maneuver around them. That's why they send out the little fighters and there's no chance for like, it was great. I feel like they used that so sparingly too, because they could have thrown a bunch of space chases in this thing and they didn't. And I loved it.
Yep. And you know, he says, he's a one man show when he's,
what am I thinking about? The whole first arc when they're flying out. Wow. The show is like when they're going through the meteor shower in that first arc of the show, that's another space chase.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Right.
Like, it's just they're just two for two.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
It's just, I mean, the show, that feels like so long ago compared to where we're at now. Like, what a journey we've gone through. It's crazy.
Well, this is the other thing that's lovely about this being 12 episodes and this being doled out over 2 months. Like, I'll be honest, we've all had a really rough last few years. I've needed a great episode of Star Wars every week.
Oh my gosh.
I've needed
it. Again, the show. I was just thinking about it today. I'm just like, this is like not only this is one of my favorite TV shows. I don't know what else.
I think it's one of my favorite TV shows. It's one of the best shows on TV that I've watched in a while. Like I just have not found those great dramas in a long time. And this to me has everything. It has the action, has the drama, has a little bit of comedy. It doesn't have a ton of comedy, but just a little bit. And I think that's been really wonderful to have something to look forward to every week. And I like the little just like head nod, the head shake from that Imperial officer. But you said it, like he's looking at the reflection of the satellite dish destroyed in front of him. And just kind of just cool that they keep on like focusing on those details.
Yeah.
And I love so much about this series. Ending of the episode, we get Diego Luna. He's trying to get a message back to Marva. He finds out that Marva has passed, and Diego Luna's face does the rest. You don't need much else to be said, because Diego Luna's face is just absolutely broken.
He and
devastated.
The other guy, which we'll see again, they part ways, and then him looking into the sun. That's like, I mean, that visual is basically how his character ends too.
You're right.
It's a good metaphor, foreshadowing. I think they did a really good job there of being like, he's kind of looking into his destiny, but for different reasons, or who knows? Yeah. It was a really moving scene. It really like it worked. Sometimes it's hard when you see guys in silly costumes and all that stuff to kind of be emotionally pulled in that way, and it really worked a lot.
I don't know. I didn't think their costumes were silly at all.
I mean, I don't think. The space aliens with the gooey neck.
Sorry,
I'm just saying generally, like throughout the show. Although I did like his shirt was a little like clubby, which I thought was kind of
interesting. but I really just came. Diego Luna has been doing such incredible work in this show, and he's not getting, like we talked about before, the big monologues. He's getting more of these moments where, like we saw, him reacting to Marva's death and then talking with Melshi, where the two of them you know, are trying to say people have to know this. People need to know what happened. People need to know what's going on. So it's better for us to separate. And you mentioned looking off into the sun, like there's the precursor or the foreshadowing to what happens in Rogue One, but there's also he's had so much like rising into the sunset or the sunrise in what we've seen in this series when he left with Marva off the planet, when he got on the ship with Luthen. He's always kind of like making his way towards the horizon.
Yeah. And he's had some days.
And I'm devastated watching him just, it's also like, you know, he's looking through these sunbeams and just thinking of Marva, you know, and his whole life with her.
Heavy.
Yeah, this show doesn't pull any punches and doesn't take any weeks off. There are no weeks off in this show, and I love it.
There is something with the gravitational pull in the future. That's it's heavy.
It's heavy, man.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Doc Brown's got to worry about it being heavy.
That's right.
Well, Chris, that was the whole episode. I could watch it again right now. I could watch all of it. I'm like going into work meetings just saying, have you watched Andor? You know, that's my personality now.
Yeah.
I think I might probably run into somebody being like, can you just keep it down, Mike? Let's not talk about Andor every minute of our
lives. You're doing this from the office right now, aren't you?
I am doing it from the office. I have actually a crowd here. They're being just as quiet as they were in the Hollywood Bowl last week.
I knew it. Yeah, great show.
Chris, for the finale, what do you think is going to happen? We're bringing everybody together on Ferrix. Do you think that Andor, Cassian's going to make it? I mean, I think he has to go back, but I don't know how it all ends. This show continues to subvert any expectation.
Yeah.
So I don't have no idea what we're going to see next week.
I have little predictions. I mean, I think like any good show, they're going to bring characters together for a point in time. And I think that might be how it ends and what we'll see. And I mean, I'm expecting some kind of Empire Strikes Back-esque cliffhanger.
Oh, wow. Where Chris.
Satisfied / unsatisfied. So, yeah, I mean, I can't even fathom a guess at this point.
Wow. Yeah, I don't either. I think we are going to get most characters together. So Dedra might likely would be there. Bix is going to be there. Cinta is going to be there. With Vel, we don't know. Cassian might be back. And Cyril will make the trip. And all of them will probably be sitting on Ferrix. And I like we got a little bit more time with that good classic bell tower ringer.
Yeah.
Might be a good opportunity to take those giant mallets he has and use those.
I'd listen to an album of that. Maybe we can make an album of that.
Well, there's the Neimos remix of the composer of Andor.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You can get a couple of different versions of the club music.
We got to get that.
Yeah. Chris, always a pleasure. So much fun. We will be back next week. We're going to do our best to record an episode before the Thanksgiving holiday. Now, everybody will be traveling. The world will, you know, who knows how the droids are going to be scattered to the winds.
We're going
to
try our hardest.
But we're going to try to record an episode on the 23rd before the holiday.
Yeah. And you know what? If it takes longer, that's just more time to enter the contest. Right?
Chris, I gave everybody a date. Now you're just saying it's open. Sorry. Open door. Well, we appreciate everybody tuning in and listening, and we'll be back next week. Again, Mad Max Ziggy, thank you for the review, and feel better soon.
We wish you the best.
Home and feeling better.
I hope you get recovered, and like we say here, the Force will be with you. Hello
there. Always. That will do it for the droids you're looking for, a Star Wars podcast.
Annie?